I'm John Batser, visiting with Mark Clifford, the author of the new book, The Troublemaker, about Jimmy Lai. He is now a multimillionaire, doing very well, keeps a pet bear, has a beautiful family, and he's about to transform himself into the man we know today, who is deeply, deeply imprisoned by the Chinese Communist Party that was part of the story of his success, because China is opening to capitalism. And Jimmy's in the right place, and he believes that hard work brings luck, and luck brings hard work. So between 1975 and the late 80s, he prospers, he travels, he eats at very good restaurants, he has ideas all the time, he's quite inventive. And then we come to Tiananmen, and that is a nightmare for China, for the people who suffered there, and for everybody who believes that they should be remembered, and Jimmy Lai is one of them. Mark, therein lies a challenge. What moved Jimmy Lai, who is a factory guy, who knows that you need good relations with everyone in order to move your product, including the local apparatchiks of the party, what moves him to identify with the victims of Tiananmen?
Well, he identified first with the students before they were victims. From his Giordano, his retail clothing chain, he started making and selling T-shirts with pictures of student leaders on the front and sending the proceeds up to China. He sent tents, he sent money. He was all in with the students. He had been enamored of Deng Xiaoping's economic reforms, which had started roughly a decade earlier. One associate who's known him, gee, almost 50 years, said he was like a Zionist when it came to how strongly he felt about China and China's possibility and potential and the reforms that were happening under Deng, which is interesting because, of course, he's on trial now on national security charges, all sorts of, you know, essentially insinuations that he's a traitor to the country. And yet he's so patriotic. He loves China so much. And he thought at that point in the spring of 1989, before the Tiananmen killings, he really thought that there was hope that the Chinese party could reform itself, that the economic reforms would lead to political and social reforms. Then wham, June 4th, 1989, hundreds, maybe thousands of Chinese, many of them among the best and the brightest in the country, killed, you know, slaughtered, run over by tanks, bayoneted, shot. And Jimmy is just heartbroken. I mean, just devastated. But he'd been very, very outspoken, and he decided that he would continue. It's just one of those moments. I mean, he's somebody with a lot of principle, a lot of drive. When he focuses on something, he wants to do it. And he thought, okay, what can I do? These guys are thugs. It's like dealing with a mafia, but they won't be around forever. He'd seen CNN. Let's remember, 1989 was one of the first. The Tiananmen killings, one of the first times we saw events happening almost real time. The video footage from a CBS or NBC didn't need to be uploaded and shipped out and things. It could be satellite transmitted out. We take that for granted. Jimmy realized this was going to have a transformative effect. He thought that with media, he could shine a light on the horrible parts of the Chinese Communist Party and hasten its demise. He decided to go into print media because that was a little bit easier, and started first a magazine and then a newspaper, which did everything from stock market coverage and economics to paparazzi starlet coverage to a really, really strong push for democracy. And he was really open about it at a time when others in Hong Kong were pulling back because the Chinese were about to take over after 156 years of British rule. In 1997, they were going to take over Hong Kong.
Jimmy now is a publisher of a magazine, Next, and a daily newspaper, the Apple Daily. And that gives him an opportunity to express his political thought, which is being transformed in the 90s. As China is being transformed. And we come to what I regard as must be a profound moment. He converts to Catholicism. The people around him help him. He's generous towards the Roman Catholic Church. He's a very well-known figure. He's a philanthropist. He spends money routinely on his staff and on people around him. But what moves him to that personal decision? Do we know, Mark?
Well, I think there are a couple of factors. First of all, in the late 1980s, in fact, a month after Tiananmen, he'd met a young woman, a young reporter who had been doing a summer internship at the South China Morning Post, one of the English language newspapers in Hong Kong. And he was smitten with Teresa Lee, as she then was, and his earlier marriage had crumbled when his wife walked out on him in the mid-1980s, leaving him with three fairly young kids. He wooed Teresa, followed her to Paris. She was studying there. She's a Francophile, and married her a couple of years later, his marriage being annulled, eventually had a Catholic ceremony because Teresa is and was and is a devout Roman Catholic. So there was certainly a very strong personal element. But others around him were Catholic. Martin Lee, who's kind of the godfather of the Hong Kong democracy movement, a very erudite barrister, was Catholic. The number two in the Democratic Party, who also happened to be Jimmy's brother-in-law, was Catholic. So there was a whole nexus of pro-democracy Catholics. And so I think the combination of Jimmy's wife and of his broader social and political circle, and the fact that, as Teresa told me, he felt like hard times were coming and it would be good to have some protection in the form of faith, compelled him to convert a week after the handover in 1997, the handover to China. That, of course, was no coincidence.
Yes, we now see in the 21st century that the opening of China is now closing, and it's closing in a brutal fashion. You can glimpse it in the protest about Tiananmen being banned, but the people in Hong Kong feel this collectively, not just Jimmy. The first protest I have is in the early 90s. Several hundred thousand people turn out in 03 to protest any challenge to the freedom that the people of Hong Kong enjoy. And between 03 and the umbrella movement of 2014, Jimmy's publishing Apple Daily and he's following events. Is he at that point in any fashion feeling threatened, or does he believe that he will not be persecuted for publishing these things?
No, he knew what he was doing. As far back as 1994, he had come under pressure from the Chinese because of an attack he wrote on the Chinese, the premier at the time, Li Peng, who was regarded as the butcher of Beijing for his role in the 1989 Tiananmen killings. And Chinese authorities responded by closing the Giordano store in Beijing on spurious grounds. They figured Jimmy would back off on the attacks. Instead, he doubled down. He sold his stake in Giordano, pocketed a couple hundred million dollars, plowed that into Apple Daily and started the newspaper. So he knew what he was up against. The month of the handover, I saw him on his stage in a large crowd, and he started crying because he said, I'm going to jail. So he knew that the day would come. If he kept pushing, if he kept being, and these are his words, the troublemaker, he was going to pay a price. And we can talk later about why and he decided to do that. But he knew that he was dealing with some very dangerous, very thuggish people. You mentioned 2003. This was the first attempt by the Hong Kong and Chinese authorities to ram a draconian national security law down the throats of the people of Hong Kong. Jimmy and his journalists were key in rallying support. So when the bill was first mooted, there were a couple of dozen people around a bonfire burning a copy of this draft bill. 8 months later, there were 500,000 people out in the streets, and many of them were holding posters that were from the newspaper, from the magazine. Jimmy provided the money, and he provided the megaphone, the media megaphone, I wouldn't say he wasn't a puppet master in the sense that the Chinese try to portray him. He helped Hong Kong people articulate what they felt. And what they felt is, we are a city of freedom. The Chinese communists have promised us 50 more years of freedom after the end of British rule. You promised us more freedom, more democracy. And we're going to hold you to that. And Jimmy helped provide the platform in a system where there were not powerful opposition parties. So Jimmy became, I think, if not before, certainly by 2003, he was becoming public enemy number one in the eyes of the old men in Beijing who run the country.
Mark Clifford is the author. The Troublemaker is the title. how Jimmy Lai became a billionaire, Hong Kong's greatest dissident, and China's most feared critic. A knock at the door. It's 2019, 2020. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bashley.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.